All right. Hello, this is Josh Buck with Buck on Business Podcast. Today, I have an extra special guest, and I'm going to read his bio here in a moment. But I think probably more than anything, I consider Justin a servant, a man of God. And I think maybe more importantly, beyond just being a mentor and a coach, a friend. And this is an absolute privilege. Justin, and if I don't give the last name, maybe I should let you give the last name. It's 16 letters. Rothlings Hofer, I think, is how you pronounce it. Got it. All right. And so I think most all of us that know him just refer to him as Justin. But Justin has a book coming out here. And when we send this out, the book will be coming out in within the next few days. I think on April 22nd, I think you told me 21st, somewhere right around there, on the power of ownership. And probably most of us are familiar with, you know, this concept of ownership, and, you know, whether you've made, you know, Jocko Willink, others that have talked about this particular topic. But Justin and the Own It community really comes at this in a little bit of a different way, especially as it relates to health, specifically in a very practical way where I've seen him most had been really working with entrepreneurs, people like myself. So Justin, I'm gonna kind of read his bio, and then I'm gonna give a quote, and then we're just kind of hop into a little bit of discussion. And what we're gonna talk about today really is going to kind of just highlight some of the book that he has coming out called The Power of Ownership. And I highly recommend, and I'll talk about this a little bit more on the back end, that any of you, entrepreneur or not, pick up this book. It is very practical, very helpful in regards to what can we do to implement, what are the things we can do to implement into our lives to help us to escalate, to elevate, and to perform at the level that we really should be and want to be, desire to be, not just inside of our business, also in our personal lives, in our communities, to truly make an impact. So Justin, he's a co-founder of Own It Coaching, a multiple seven-figure coaching company. As a former performance coach in the NCAA and NHL, through Own It, he has made the same ecosystem that is usually only available to the best athletes in the world now available to you. Utilizing best-in-class testing, technology, and coaching, he and his team have been able to transform the health and lives of hundreds of thousands of leaders throughout the country while empowering them on their journey and making the complex topic of health simple, actionable, and personal. He is a speaker and the host of the Own It Show podcast. Justin's the author of three best-selling books, I think probably soon to be a fourth, The Athletic Performance Blueprint and Own It. So Justin, just an absolute, just, I don't know. I think I've recorded a lot of podcasts. I've done close to 200 of my own. I've been on probably 100 other different podcasts, but I don't know if I've been on one that I've been looking forward to more than this one. So I think the one big quote when I read through that I pulled out of this in regards to ownership is a word that gets thrown out a lot, but I loved the definition that you put in here in regards to ownership. Ownership is the intersection point of responsibility and accountability. And so I think a lot of times we think of the concept of ownership. It's like, okay, I'm taking ownership. I'm owning this. I'm taking responsibility for it. I think a lot of times we have a difficult time getting to that point of accountability. And kind of the beauty of working with Justin and his team, providing that accountability piece. And so to have that person that comes alongside you, that holds you accountable in the area in which you're working. So Justin, just kind of talk maybe a little bit through some of the highlights of the book. And so as entrepreneurs, we really have a tendency to really overwork ourselves. We almost wear as a badge of honor. I'm up at 11:30 at night, sending out email, 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm doing the grind. I'm doing all this type of thing. But really, we end up getting the point of just driving ourselves into the ground. We simply cannot perform. We're overly tired and we just find ourselves sluggish. And year over year, we find our health starting to fail and that type of thing. So you challenge us in the book to basically move away from this concept of what is normal, because a lot of times when we talk about normal, it's essentially emulating others, leading, which really does lead us to a feeling overwhelmed, frustrated, not getting any sort of results. Sometimes with our health and our business and other areas, we kind of hit that wall because we neglect certain aspects of our lives. So what does this whole concept meaning as far as looking at normal and looking at things differently? So what does that mean? And how do we begin to change our paradigm from accepting normalcy or that which is normal into moving into a mindset to look at things differently and living differently?
It's a great question. And the reason I love where we're starting is it's really the fundamental piece that caused me to want to write the book and really lean into this. Stepping out of the NHL in 2020 was one of those things that it was God calling for me. It was one thing that had led me to this through what my experience was. And for over a decade, that's where I lived. I was managing the health, wellness, and performance of the best athletes in the world. And when I stepped into that realm, what was normal was to have all this data, to have heart rate data and sleep data and blood work and training load data. We would have all of this, but it would sit in a shelf or it'd sit in a computer and we would never use it. And everybody wondered why we would get sick at the same time, why injury rates would always flare up, why the injuries and the sicknesses were always the same, and how we could never break through it. And I came up with this concept and this idea of what if we used data to drive decisions? What if we took the same data to drive the direction or determine the direction we went so that we could create personalized N of one solutions? Well, as we found over the course of 7 of the next 10 years, we ended up being the least injured team, the least sick team, and one of the highest performing teams every single year. And it really changed the industry. However, in 2019, what I noticed was that I started to get brain fog that I couldn't overcome. I started to feel fatigue like I'd never had before. I wasn't sleeping well. I started to bloat anytime I ate anything. And I happened to go to all the doctors that we had on staff, and they all said, "You're the picture of health. You're exactly what we would want everybody to look like if we could. There's nothing wrong with you." And I said, "That's just not true." I said, "I do not feel well. I know there's something wrong. If I look at my numbers, if I look at the data that I know, something is not right, and I can feel that." Well, I ended up going to a specialist, and they found four polyps the size of my thumb in my colon that were all precancerous, and they found an ulcer the size of a quarter in my stomach that was also precancerous. And I tell that story because it was at that moment that the surgeon looked at me and said, "Man, if we had not found this, if you had not been so persistent, if you hadn't taken ownership of your health, you wouldn't have seen your 35th birthday." And that just really hit me very heavily. And I realized that what I was doing for athletes, what I was doing for those 26 men, was not an athlete problem, but a human problem. And now, the fact that it's a human problem, how do we take this concept and bring it in? And so the concept of normal is, what is normal? Well, it's normal to work yourself to a point of exhaustion. It's normal not to sleep well. It's normal to have brain fog. It's normal to be fatigued. It's normal to gain weight as you start a family. It's normal to suffer from just going and grabbing meals randomly as you have them. It's normal to skip workouts because you're sending more emails. It's normal to do all of these things. It's often, as you mentioned, Josh, it's a badge of honor. It's something that's celebrated, especially in the world of entrepreneurship. Well, if we consider what the input is of what's normal, what the symptoms are that are normal, well, if that's the process, it's inevitable that we're going to get an outcome. What's the outcome of that system of normal? Obesity, diabetes, heart disease, cancer, COPD, anxiety, depression. The list goes on and on and on, which has led us to allowing or empowering chronic illness to be the leading cause of death in the United States at 71%. Which, if we dive deeper into that number, 95% of those illnesses are preventable through habit, lifestyle, and behavior change. And so this, for me, is what this dichotomy of normal versus different actually looks like. Is, if normal has a certain system to get to a certain symptom, to get to a certain outcome, what does a different system look like? Because we don't rise to the level of our goals. Everybody wants to be fit. Everybody wants to be mentally clear. Everybody wants to be focused. Everybody wants to have the impact. Everybody wants to have the platform. But they don't have the system set up in order to get there. And so we don't rise to the level of our goals. We fall to the level of our systems. And the systems that 95% of us are playing with are broken. Those systems are set by default to lead us down the road of high levels of symptoms, things that are normal, that leads us to this chronic illness outcome. And so what I want to do is I want to empower people with a different way of living, a life by design, a life that's intentional, a life that's consistent, an N of one solution based on what is prioritized, what is purposeful, what is based around your season of life and something that's meaningful to you. And so once we get that clear, we can ultimately set up your system so that it's something that you're able to take with you and live life differently.
Kind of wonderful laying the foundation to kind of move a little bit more into the nuts and bolts. I remember early on when you and I had one of our first conversations, and I'm guessing this is probably almost about 3.5 years ago when you and I first crossed paths, and it was a mutual, I think, friend may have been a client of yours that we ended up making a connection out in I think in Vegas at the time when this individual had passed along your name. And on one of our early calls, you had given this line, and I heard it, and I've heard you say it over and over again, and you repeat it a number of times in the book. And you say this repeatedly, that our bodies don't know the difference between different types of stress, and that our body doesn't know the difference even between realized and perceived stress. I want to go ahead and stop here and just mention Justin. He has a TED Talk on the topic, and he's kind of know. I think a lot of times you kind of refer to it the HRV guy and that type of thing. We'll get into that in a little bit. So this is not an area to where Justin went through and he did a little bit of work. I mean, this is like a deep study and a really just kind of I wouldn't say created the science that I think our Lord and Savior created the science, but it kind of began to the point of understanding a lot of the science that goes behind how and why our bodies perform the way that they do. But that there are these different types of stress, and your body doesn't know the difference. We think like, oh, we go to the gym and we work out or we run a mile, so we think, okay, that's stress. We go in hard labor, that type of stress. But not realizing that I could be sitting behind a desk or I can be dealing with in a stressful work environment, maybe a relationship problem, whatever the case may be, and your body is still feeling that same amount of stress and your body doesn't know the difference. Or your body can even get to the point of just thinking and putting yourself in the place of putting yourself in a place of stress. So what are these different types of stress and how does it impact our bodies and where does the understanding begin to move us toward either controlling or minimizing stress or can you even control or minimize it?
Yes, it's such a great question. And before we start, I want to give two examples. So listeners, if you're listening, I'm going to give two examples to show two different concepts. Number one, that our body doesn't know the difference, mental, physical, spiritual, or emotional stress. And number two is that your body doesn't know the difference between real or perceived stress. The reaction is always the same. And so first things first is I want you to close your eyes. Everybody who's listening to this, Josh, you can close your eyes as well. And I want you to picture a lemon. You see this lemon tree, you reach up, you pluck it, you take this lemon, you roll it in your hands, you feel the texture, you smell the lemon that's there. And then I want you to grab the knife that's in your pocket, pull that out, make a little slit, make a little cut, open it up, split it into two. And I want you to look at it. I want you to look at that lemon. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to squeeze it a little bit and create a little bit of juice. Now, I want you to take your tongue and I want you to just go and lick that whole lemon. How many of you, as you lick that lemon, felt your salivary glands turn on? I'm sure everybody. Now, I want you to go back to that same picture, that same exact place. I want you to keep your eyes closed. And now I want you to imagine as you finish licking that lemon, immediately someone came from underneath you, and now you're falling back and through a black hole, and you're just falling. You're in a free fall. How many of you felt almost like your stomach rise a little bit? Stomach rise into the top of your chest. Open up your eyes. Nothing changed. We're sitting here. You and I are having a conversation. I'm in my office. You're in your office. My salivary glands, and I know what's going to happen. My salivary glands went. As I was describing that, my stomach rose to my chest. Your body doesn't know the difference between real, perceived, positive, negative, past, future, present, mental, physical, spiritual, emotional stress. All it knows is that it has to keep Josh alive. It has to keep Justin alive. And so the reaction is to increase adrenaline, increase norepinephrine, increase cortisol so that it can ultimately protect you and be ready in what we call a fight or flight state. And by being in a fight or flight state, it allows us to make sure that we can react. So now let's go real life examples. If you're in a fight with your spouse, if you're running a 5 mile run or getting a really hard workout in, if you're sending your kids off to college, if you're trying to figure out how to pay bills, if you're trying to figure out how to activate a problem that you're having in your business, your body doesn't know the difference between these stressors, between these forms of stress. And thus, they're all cumulative, meaning they're all going into this cup. And your cup has a certain capacity. And at a certain point, that cup starts to overflow. And that overflow becomes symptoms that you start to experience. Headaches, brain fog, inability to sleep, anxiety, weight gain, overwhelm, forgetfulness, you name it. And that's your body trying to say, hey, I'm in overload. I can't handle this anymore. But we don't speak the language of our body. And because we don't speak the language and we ignore it, those symptoms become normal. And those symptoms ultimately lead to illness because at a certain point, your body can no longer handle it and it breaks. And that's when we get to go into our medical system. And a lot of people say, hey, our medical system's broken. Our medical system's not operating well. I say, our medical system is actually doing exactly what it was designed to do. Fix things that are broken. Your foot's facing the wrong way. Get me to my doctor. My appendix is about to burst. Get me to my doctor. I've all of a sudden have cancer. They get me to my doctor and make money. Those are the two things it's been designed to do. And it does them very, very well. But we as humans want it to be preventative or proactive in our health measures. It would be like asking an app to get an apple from an orange tree. And so we have to take ownership of our health because it's our job, it's our responsibility, and it's our purpose to set up and steward this thing that we're living in. And so a life by design is living intentionally and consistently based upon the habits and behaviors that are going to allow us to have the greatest capacity to manage the stress of what we're being is being placed on us very strategically. So that cup that's filling up suddenly gets holes poked in it through certain habits and behaviors to give us more capacity to take on more stress throughout the day so we can live our life to the fullest. We can realize the potential that's there because we don't have the luxury to turn the faucets off. We can't shut the business off. We can't shut the relationship off. We can't shut the kids off. We can't shut the finding our purpose or our training or any of these things off. They're going to continue to keep coming. Thus, we have to manage and figure out how to take greater ownership of the behaviors and habits that we do on a more consistent basis.
You talk about the bodies and communication. So you said we aren't trained to read how our bodies are communicating with us, and this can lead us to living in a life of default instead of an abundance. So we live out of rhythm because of stress and recovery, and you talk about this in the book. What is the first step up for us to become aware of what our bodies are telling us?
So number one, and you just said the word, is generating awareness is so key. Like so many of us have no idea where we're currently sitting, no idea where we're currently at, no idea how our body's currently handling anything. And in the book, I actually have a little assessment. It's called the Holmes-Rahe assessment. And what they did during this study, it was about 250,000 people that went through this stress assessment. And it was it's about 45 questions. It's in the book. It really focuses on, again, if you read all the questions, it's like real, perceived, positive, negative, mental, physical, spiritual, emotional stressors, and you answer either yes or no. At the end, it gives you a number. And what they found, they actually were able to predict health breakdown, holistic health breakdown, mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, within a 3% accuracy, like incredibly, incredibly high level of accuracy. And so if you scored 150 points or less, you had a low amount of stress or light or stress change, life change stress in your life, and thus low susceptibility of health breakdown. If you scored 150 to 300, you actually had an increase of 50% probability to have a health breakdown, mental, physical, spiritual, emotional. That can be all of a sudden anxiety comes on, all of a sudden inability to sleep. It could be weight gain. It could be you develop headaches or whatever type of breakdown you need. Remember, it's holistic. In the next year, if you scored 300 points or more, you had an 80% chance of health breakdown over the next year if you continued on that same pace. That's an awareness tool. Now, How many of us are actually going to do a assessment like that every day or every week or every month to bring us that level of clarity or that level of awareness? I would guess probably not very many. Let's go zero, right? So this is where, even going back to my story, at 13 years old, I started to my dad said to me, "Son, talent will get you noticed, but consistency will get you paid." And I wanted to figure out, how do I become the most consistent version of myself? If payment comes through consistency, how do I maximize my ability to be consistent? Well, I have to be the best version of me every single day. That's the way I do it. So how do I figure that out? How do I become the most energetic, the most focused, the most mentally clear, the most aware guy that I can be? And at 13, I was reading medical journals where most kids were reading comic books. And I came across this study that said, utilizing HRV to measure recovery. I'll never forget, it was in the National Strength and Conditioning Association's journal of like 1990, something like that. And I read it and I was like, I need to start tracking HRV. So that's what I started to do. And so this metric that I've studied, it's what I did all my postgraduate doctoral work in. It's truly been this measure that I've been so intrigued about, because the definition that I've come up with, heart rate variability, the best definition I've ever been able to determine, which is the simplest, is it is the language of our body and its communication to us to help us understand how we're adapting to stress and strain. Remember, mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, real, perceived, positive, negative, the body doesn't know the difference. So now, Josh, all of a sudden, if we have a single metric, heart rate variability, that we're able to understand how our body is adapting to stress and strain in which we're being exposed to, every single day we have a number that says, hey, Josh, you're at 14 today, or you're at 25 today, or you're at 87 today. Knowing that the higher the number, the more capacity you have to take on stress, the better prepared you are to take on stress. Do you not think that number would ultimately be something that you could now be empowered by to say, hey, I need to change the way I'm living, or I need to lean in further to this habit sequence that I've been developing, or this routine and rhythm set that I've been operating within? And so that's, for me, the greatest, most holistic number to understand how your health and wellness is being optimized or forgotten on this journey is heart rate variability, and otherwise known as HRV.
Can you explain to us a little bit what that metric is? I when you first mentioned it to me, I'd never heard of it before, and no idea what it was. And so you, I remember you kind of getting up and you started to kind of describe what it is. And it took me a little bit of kind of a little bit to understand it. And
Totally.
Justin does a really good job of giving you a visual inside the book, as far as what that actually looks like. But can you kind of explain to us what is HRV, heart rate variability? What is that, and why is that so important?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll give you, and listeners out there, I'll use Josh and I as an example. So let's say, and Josh, I'll ask you this question. If you have a resting heart rate, resting heartbeat of 60 beats per minute, would it make sense that your heart is beating at 1 beat per second? Mathematically.
Yes.
60 beats per minute divided by 60 seconds equals 1 beat per minute.
Beat a minute,
Or
right? 1 beat
1 beat per second,
per
pardon
second,
me.
right?
But that's not actually how our body functions. Our body doesn't work that way. What ends up happening is our heart only beats when it has to. So let's take, for example, that Josh has a resting heart rate of 60 beats per minute, and I have a resting heart rate of 60 beats per minute. If we actually start to look at this, and Josh is adapting to stress really, really well. He's been training, he's fit, he's eating well, he's well slept, he's got some self-care practices throughout the day, he's got just a great rhythm going on in his life versus stress and recovery. Josh's heart goes, oh man, I feel good. I'm loosey-goosey. It ends up beating whenever it has to. It's like the windsock outside of a used car lot. It's like just very sporadic and like just waving whenever it has to. And what'll happen is you see the heart beat at 790 milliseconds, then 945 milliseconds, then 872 milliseconds, then 655 milliseconds. There's a high level of variance between the time beats that are occurring. Myself, on the other hand, I'm not adapting well to stress and strain. I didn't sleep very well last night. I traveled on a plane. I didn't get my workout in this morning because I was stuck in traffic and I didn't get to where I needed to go. I've had back to back to back to back Zoom calls all day. I've had to make a couple really hard decisions today. I've had some really tough conversations, and now I'm on a podcast that I'm super nervous for. In doing this, my body's like, oh my gosh, we just have to keep Justin alive. And so the rhythm and the variation or the variability drops substantially. And so the time sequencing becomes 755 milliseconds, 765 milliseconds, 782 milliseconds, 755 milliseconds. And so that variance drops. And so the higher variance, the higher that HRV number means the better adapted to stress and strain, the better rhythm you are in, where conversely, the less adapted to stress and strain you are, the more rhythmic it is going to be and the less variation you are going to have. And so the higher HRV number, the better. The lower the HRV number, it's an alert. We are not adapting well, and it should be an awareness metric to us to say, hey, I need to change something in how I'm behaving and focus a little bit more on this rest and recovery aspect.
And then how do we go out? How do we go about measuring it?
Yeah, so there's a whole bunch of different things that we can do. The best in class measurement tools. Before I go into best in class measurement tools, I'm going to talk a little bit about why I hate the measurement tools to begin with. I hate the measurement tools because a lot of these companies, Whoop, Oura, Fitbit, Apple, Polar, Garmin, you name it, they all use their own algorithms because that's their IP. That's where their value comes from. That's where their value prop to everybody comes from. And I don't know what a readiness score means. I don't know what a regeneration score means. I don't know what a stress score means. Like, I don't know these things. They're all algorithmically based that just continue to keep me, the consumer, in a deeper state of confusion about how I actually adapt to these behaviors. However, all of these tools that I just spoke about measure heart rate variability. And so the best in class tools are Whoop or Oura. I love them. They are the best in class across the board to passively and accurately measure heart rate variability. There's still some data quality things that are going to come up, but it's going to at least give you a very accurate direction of where you're going. If you have an Apple Watch, because I'm guessing a lot of people listening will likely have Apple Watches if they don't have a Oura Whoop already, I would like you to go to Apple Health, go to the app Apple Health. Go to the bottom right-hand corner, click on Browse. After you click Browse, click on Heart. After you click on Heart, click on Heart Rate Variability. And you can then go and see either on a week, a month, a 6 month, or a year trend. Once you do that, you can identify where your heart rate variability is actually sitting. If you're 40 years old and you don't have an HRV of about 45 to 85, that's your body communicating something to you that you are not adapting to stress and strain very well, and you need to create a change ASAP, or you need help directing that. If you are 50 years old and you don't have an HRV of 40 to 80, your body is communicating something to you, and you need to create a change ASAP, or you need to help have somebody help direct you on where to go in there. And so that's just like a little bit of a range as to where you may be falling and where you ultimately want to be. But again, remembering that everybody's unique and everybody's different, it's your trend that you want to see and pay attention to. Are you trending downwards? Do you have a consistent low trend? Do you have a consistent high trend? What does this look like to you so that we can get very specific and purposeful and make sure that it is, again, using data to drive the direction of where we actually need to be going?
So through all this, you've gone through, you've laid the foundation, you've given us the definition of HRV, then you really get into the true practical portion of the book. And the rest of the book is kind of built around, well, the next section of the book is around four pillars, and then you get to the end of talking about creating this life, and we'll mention that at the end. But we started getting very practical, and you mentioned these four pillars. The first one is the first pillar that you have is that of fuel. And of course, nutrition, health, diet, kind of all these things are very confusing. I remember back in the 80s, granola, it was like it was considered. I remember my mom, I'm a little kid, and my mom, I'm going to try to lose weight. And all of a sudden, it's granola, become the craze. Only realize that it's loaded in sugar and everything else, not very good for you, right? The way that it gets consumed. And now, we have keto and paleo, you had Atkins, and you have all these kind of different things. And you need to measure this, you need to buy this, you have pills, whatever the case may be. And it can become very overwhelming. And, bottom line is most of the time we don't know what to do. And you do a really good job of kind of just simplify it. Once again, kind of really simplifying things in a very holistic way, to give practical direction to the reader. And so we want to tend to also blame our genetic predispositions. You hear people say, I'm big boned, you hear all this kind of stuff. So is that real? I mean, do we have these true genetic, the genetic predispositions for diabetes or, heart issues, whatever the case may be. Is that true? And then if it is true, what can we do about it? How can we break away from those?
So the predisposition, yes, definitely. There's genetic markers that are either turned on or turned off based upon family lineage. However, what ends up happening is we blame genetics on why things happen. And so I remember I was keynoting to a room of doctors, and I stood up on stage and I said, "How many people are currently treating people with obesity?" It was probably 80% of the room's hands went up. I said, "How many people are currently treating people for anxiety and depression?" Oh, 80% of the room's hands went up. I said, "How many people are currently treating somebody for a chronic illness?" 100% of the room's hands went up. I said, "How many of you know the genes that cause these individual diseases?" Nobody's hand went up. Because genes don't cause these. They don't cause these. It actually comes from the environmental factors in which you're exposed to. Environmental factors of which you're exposed to, because the genes will load the gun, but your habits, behaviors will pull the trigger. And it's that need to make sure that we understand that ultimately awakens us to where we're going. And this comes back to the concept of ownership, is making sure, hey, you can have the genetic predisposition for diabetes and never realize diabetes because you eat well, you exercise, you focus on getting good, proper sleep, you stress manage properly, you have the proper avenues for dealing with the mental issues and the emotional stress that you're going through on a day-to-day basis. You have the systems in place. Remember, we don't rise to the level of our goals, we fall to the level of our systems, and many of us have systems that are designed for failure. And so this is where we need to really lean in and be able to take ownership of this, because it's not our genes' fault. It's not your genetic predisposition's fault. It's the environmental factors and the habits and behaviors that you engage in consistently that ultimately create your outcome of inevitability.
In regards to the fuel portion, when you get into that when you get into that pillar, and you kind of mention you talk about a little bit of these dispositions and whatnot in that particular chapter. So when we talk about this fueling portion as it relates to is that has to relate to environment or what we're putting into our bodies or kind of everything? What does that look like?
Yeah, when we talk about fuel really leans into what are you eating and how are you hydrating? What does this look like in terms of your cellular deficiencies? And I talk a little bit about cellular deficiencies. And once we understand, okay, vitamins, minerals, and amino acids are the foundational principles, the foundational building blocks to how we're operating. Vitamins, minerals, and amino acids are used in 100% of processes to allow our bodies to survive. Like, I need you to hear that. 100% of processes need for our bodies to survive use vitamins, minerals, and amino acids. And so, knowing this, we have to make sure that we have a very pointed and purposeful approach to how we are doing this. I say if your diet has a name to it, it's probably the wrong one for you, because it hasn't been designed for you. It's not based around what you need. It may help you feel good for a little while because you've cut out certain things that create inflammation, or that has all of a sudden eliminated something that doesn't agree with you, or you've now added something into your diet that is replacing a vitamin or mineral that you were dysfunctional in. But how do we do that sustainably? And we can only do that through, again, personalization, understanding what we're cellularly dysfunctional in and then being able to operationalize with that. And once we actually minimize or diminish cellular deficiency, we'll see HRV increase because the stress on your body, the stress on your system that you are unaware of will start to go away as well. And so the things of feeling tired after you eat will start to go away. The mental brain fog that happens after you eat will go away. The inability to have energy all day long will start to go away. These things and symptoms that you've considered normal will dissipate once fuel is done in the appropriate and purposeful way for you.
Once again, I want to point out, for those that are listening, when you get into the book, he actually gets very practical direction on what does this look like? What are things that you can do? And so we obviously don't have the time in this platform to get into all that, but he does do a really good job in all of these giving us some very practical helps. The second pillar you talk about is that of build. Said you state that the greatest way to handle stress is to build a stronger foundation. So what areas should we be focusing on to build a stronger foundation and become intentional with our overall health?
Yeah, when it comes to build, I mean, Peter Attia talks about this all the time, and it's VO2 max. When VO2 max is looked after, which is your body's ability to utilize oxygen at a higher level, the higher your VO2 max number, the further away you are from death. And so making sure that we have a solid foundation of strength, cardiovascular fitness, flexibility, and then an ability of fun. All within this area of build, both physical and mental. I talk about training and movement as well as mindset. So, training and movement being things where you're going to the gym, you're maybe going for a walk throughout the day, so you're not chained to your desk, you're getting outside and getting into the sun. Mindset, you're connecting with maybe a therapist, a coach throughout the week, you're doing some type of breath work, Bible reading, something that's challenging your mind. How are you growing in that area? But building is all about building the foundation physically and mentally to be able to withstand stress at a higher level.
The third pillar you talk about is that of repair. So we go through fueling, you talk about building, and then kind of the repair. And I think for those of you who are listening, kind of can now kind of visualize, maybe circles is wrong, the wrong word, but can kind of visualize what's happening here. But the third pillar you have is that of repair. And you had this very practical help in there, and you call this the 3-2-1-0 rule. And so you talk about this as well as getting into many practical helps, including in the areas of sleep, hydration, training, diet, to name a few. So what is that 3-2-1-0 rule? Maybe to kind of give just a little bit of a practical takeaway that the listener can take with them. So what is that rule, and what does it have to do with optimizing rhythm?
Yeah, so when we think about the pillar of repair, we get into immune system and sleep. Those are the two things within repair that we really want to be aware of. And the 3-2-1 rule, which I love the 3-2-1 rule when we talk about sleep because it's so practical and so easy. The biggest thing that we can do to create a great night's sleep is to have a consistent sleep and wake time. So within about 30 minutes going to bed, without about 30 minutes waking up. So if it's 10 o'clock, we're going to bed, 6 o'clock, we're waking up, somewhere between 10 and 10:30, 6 and 6:30. We want to be doing that consistently. Now, in preparation for that, we want to make sure we're doing the 3-2-1 rule. So 3 hours before bed, no food, because we have 400 times more melatonin produced in our gut than is produced by the pineal gland in our brain. And if we stop eating 3 hours before bed, we can now get into a deeper stage of sleep faster in our night so that we get, again, more stages of REM and slow wave sleep, which is the deep restorative and repairing sleep during the night. 2 hours before bed, we want to eliminate all work. So decision-making processes, things that are going to be causing us to, our brain to continue to keep going. Because remember, mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, our body doesn't know the difference. And so when we start thinking and having to make decisions and having to think about things, it increases that cortisol level at night, which is not going to, again, allow us to get into deep stages of sleep because our body's like, we just have to keep Justin alive. And then 1 hour before bed, eliminating blue light. So getting rid of all computers, tablets, iPhones, TVs, anything that's shining blue light, because for every 30 minutes of blue light exposure after sunset, it delays melatonin release by about 60 minutes. So we can think if we're watching an hour or 2 hours of TV or on our iPad or on our computer after sunset, we're not getting optimal melatonin release until about 3, maybe 4 hours after we've started to go to bed. So if you're going to bed at 10, you're not getting melatonin release that's optimal until 2 or 3 in the morning, which is already past our optimal sleep quality window. And so we're missing out on these things. And that's why we get into this backwards or inverse effect of being tired at night and being wired in the morning, to now it flips and we're wired at night. We can't shut our brain down. We're ready to go. We're not tired enough to sleep. We can't fall asleep, and being tired in the morning. And so that simple 3-2-1 rule can give us a framework that allows us to start building our own night routines so that we can then get into the best night's sleep possible.
So what you're telling us is that eating a bag of potato chips while watching the YouTube on our and with a cup of coffee right before we go to bed, probably not the best idea. So
Trying to figure out what tomorrow's schedule at work looks like. No, less than
yeah,
optimal.
and that then those 11:30 at night emails, right?
Yeah.
So the fourth pillar you have, Justin, is that of renew. And you talk about self-care. Oh, I'm sorry. You have self-care and routine are kind of buzzwords that we hear a lot. They're spoken of frequently. But you talk about having a life by design habits for self-care and for rhythm. So what are one or two things we can begin doing today to begin establishing our self-care routine?
Yeah, I love that. In that pillar of renew, we lean in heavily on self-care and environment. So like what self-care practices do you have? And a lot of people get self-care wrong because they think a lot of these mindset practices or mindfulness practices. But I define self-care as something you only do for you. Self-care could literally be playing video games. Self-care could be shooting hoops in the front yard. It could be going to the driving range. It could be going and getting your nails done. Like it literally could be whatever it is that helps you feel renewed and ready to go. And if we abide by that, it's going to open up a lot of opportunities for us. I give this example all the time where I had this client I was working with. He loved to water ski. He hadn't been water skiing in 3 years. He was a New York Times bestselling author. He writes about, I don't know, two books every 3 years. And he's on this path. He's got 52 books written already. And he said, "Justin, I've got writer's block for the first time ever." I said, "When's the last time you water skied?" He goes, "Man, it's had to have been 3 years." I said, "This week, I want you to go, pardon me, over the next 3 weeks, I want you to water ski 3 times a week." He's like, "Justin, there's no way." I said, his name, let's call him Pete. I said, "Pete, you live on a lake. You have a boat in your backyard and you've got a son who loves to drive it." I said, "You have no excuses. Just build it into your time frame." Well, 2 weeks later, Pete called me, tears streaming down his face. I hear the wind in the back. He's like, "Justin, I don't know what you did, but I broke through. And I wrote the whole book water skiing. And we've been out here for the last 3 hours." And I said, "It wasn't anything I did. What you did was you now poked holes in that cup that allowed the stress to come out to give you capacity back to have clarity and creativity so that you could ultimately think in the level in which you needed. And it was only because you gave yourself the self-care practices that allowed it. You also changed your environment. You went outside rather than being cooped up in your office. You made sure you were getting sunlight instead of having the fluorescent lights. Like you're aware of the environment in which you were present in." And so environment with repair and renew allows you to get into this new space that also, again, impacts how your body handles stress.
Going to kind of wrap things up here. You go into the last section of the book talking about this life by design. And we're not going to get, I mean, you kind of talked a little bit about it throughout the particular podcast, but that's kind of really going to provide the big takeaway as it relates to all the teaching, the content that Justin put together. And that right there is definitely worth the price of the book. If you are a client of mine and you would like a copy, just text me, email my office, and I'll send you out a free copy. I do have some coming to me a little bit later, I think later on this month or next month, and I'll send that out to you. So just reach out, and I'm more than happy to send you a copy out. And so everything we talked about today just scratches the surface. Encourage you to buy the book. Justin, where can people learn more about you? Where can they go? Can they pre-order the book now? Where can they go to connect with you? I know you have a podcast, a tremendous podcast, goes into a lot of these particular types of topics with wonderful guests as well. So where can people learn more about you, and where can they go to pre-order the book?
Yeah, that's awesome, Josh. I appreciate you. You can go to thepowerofownershipbook.com and you can pre-order it right up until April 22nd, our release date. And so, if you do get the pre-order, you'll obviously get a lot of the pre-order bonuses, early access to the vault, some live educational sessions with myself. You get entered to actually win a trip to Miami and spend a day with me and 10 others who went into that pre-order list. And then so yeah, that's the power of ownershipbook.com. And then if you just want to know more about myself, more about our company, more about what we do, how we can help you at a bigger level, own it coaching, ownit coaching.com.
Justin, thank you. Appreciate it. Look forward to hearing a lot of positive feedback from individuals who pick up the book, and hopefully many of them decide to connect with you and consume the content as well. Justin, once again, thank you. This is Josh Belk with the Belk on Business Podcast. Thank you for listening. We'll talk again soon.